You're listening to the teaching ministry of Houston's First Baptist Church, a relevant biblical community. For more information, visit houstonsfirst.org.
We've been in the book of Esther, and so I want you to turn in your Bibles, if you will, to the book of Esther. If you go to Psalms right in the middle of your Bible and go left, you will find Esther right there, and it'll be a perfect time to be there. So welcome to all of our campuses, Siena, Cyprus, Espanol, downtown, those watching on the web, all of that sort of thing. It is just great to get everybody together. In the book of Esther is where we're going to be, and I want you to also grab your listening guide that we've got so that you can take some great notes as we go along. May is a month of leadership. We've got leadership that happens through the moms in May. Can we give our moms a round of applause just for a second? We're appreciating the leadership of the moms. What a great thing that is. May is a month of leadership with graduation. People graduating college, high school, eighth grade into ninth grade. They're going that next step or just another grade up. There's leaders that are going out. And so we've been looking at the book of Esther and seeing leadership in this book. Here's what Esther is about. There's a king, and he's not really that good of a guy. He kicks out the queen. He gets a new queen, and her name is Esther. She has a cousin named Mordecai, and Mordecai, we're going to see here, is going to rescue the king because he's going to be, they're going to have an assassination attempt against him. So, and it goes on where then in this whole story of Esther, they're going to try to annihilate the Jewish people. And Esther's going to rise up, and she's going to be the person that stops all of that. And then we're going to see that in coming weeks. But we're talking about leadership in this time. Being a good leader and being a good follower is what I'm hoping to get us ready to be as we go through this time of teaching. Now, here's how we've been defining leadership. Leadership is character plus skill equaling service. Character being who you are, skill being what you can do, those are both important, and then resulting in service, that we're able to serve others. It's not about me getting mine. It's not about self-serving. It's about serving others. Psalm 78, verse 72 says, "And David was their shepherd with integrity of heart and with skillfulness of hands." We see this addition problem right there in that verse. Now, leadership is character plus skill equaling service. There was an intern that I had a while back, and he was a student. And so I gave him a leadership project, and he went off to do his leadership project. And as he went leading, he found out throughout this project, there were some folks that were supposed to do something, and they didn't follow through on what they said they were going to do. There was something that was supposed to happen, and it ended up happening later than when it was supposed to happen. Then he found that there was something they were supposed to buy and they needed these resources. It ended up costing more than what it needed to happen. And so you had people falling down on the job. You had the resources not coming in. You had something late. And he walked into my office and he said, "Greg, can I tell you something?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Leadership stinks." And I said, "Now you're getting it. Now you're understanding leadership." Because see, if we just think that leadership is vision and leadership is life change and leadership is just everything's great and it's always good to be the leader instead of being the follower. Whenever you think that, you don't realize that there's an underside of leadership. Leadership stinks. It's awesome at times. It's great at times. But other times, leadership stinks. And if you don't understand the underside of it, here's what'll happen. You won't lead very long. And you'll end up finally just going, "I'm done with this, and I'm just going to be passive," instead of really being out there as a leader. Now, we want to be good leaders, and we want to be good followers. I've been in leadership about 25 years, and God willing, hopefully have another 25 years ahead of me. But in that, I found that leadership stinks in a lot of ways. A guy named Jeff Org wrote a book. He's the president of Golden Gate Seminary. He wrote a book called The Painful Side of Leadership. I really appreciated that book because so many people don't talk about that. And we make it just rosy. And then when we get into it, we go, "Wait a minute." And then before you know it, we're out of it. And we don't want to be a leader. And we don't want God to use us. And we don't want to make a difference because it's just too hard. We're going to look in Esther chapter 2, beginning in verse 21. And we're going to basically see two characters in this story. It's a true story. Mordecai is going to be the good guy. And Haman's going to be the bad guy. So here we go in leadership, looking at this in leadership in Esther chapter 2, verse 21. "During those days, while Mordecai was sitting at the king's gate," he was going to check on Esther, make sure she was okay, "Bigthan and Teresh, two eunuchs, were guarding the king's entrance, and they became infuriated and tried to assassinate King Ahasuerus. When Mordecai learned of the plot, he reported it to Queen Esther. She told the king on Mordecai's behalf, and when the report was investigated and verified, both men were hanged on the gallows. This event was recorded in the court's records of daily events in the king's presence. Now, what should happen at that point? It should be high five for Mordecai, ticker tape parade for Mordecai. Mordecai, you get this new horse, cow, golden ring, whatever it is in this society. Everything's great for Mordecai, but let's look at chapter 3. After all this took place, King Ahasuerus honored Haman. Why was Haman honored? Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agite, and he promoted him in rank and gave him a higher position than all of the other officials. The entire royal staff at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman because the king had commanded this to be done for him. But Mordecai would not bow down or pay homage. So here we have Mordecai as the one that rescues the king, but Haman is the one that's lifted up in leadership. Let me just tell you, here we go. Leadership and life are not fair. Leadership and life are not fair. I want us to say that together. Everybody, every campus, I want us to say it together because I just want to discourage us just right from the beginning, okay? Just right from the beginning of the whole message, I just wanted to really discourage us. You ready? On the count of three, we're going to say it. One, two, three. Leadership and life are not fair. Mordecai is the one that rescued the king, and Haman is the one that is lifted up. Haman is an Agite. Now, what does that mean? Have you ever heard of the Amalekites? They're in the Bible as well. It's the same group of people, and they were avowed enemies of the Jewish people. So they were avowed enemies of the Jewish people. In 1 Samuel chapter 15, Saul was to kill and annihilate all the Amalekites. He didn't do it, and an Amalekite ends up taking his life. So his disobedience here is going to end up with a problem there. So we've got now these generations of folks that were supposed to be gone, but they keep going on, and Haman is one of those. So for generations, he has been a hater of the Jews. So he steps forward now with this full hatred of the Jews, and he is going to go against Mordecai, but going against Mordecai is basically so that he can try to annihilate the Jews. Life is not fair. Mordecai should have been lifted up. Haman was lifted up. But guess what? Even though life is not fair, God is still faithful. God is still faithful. See, the issue of leadership in life is not about the fairness of life. It's about the faithfulness of God. So the Jews are going to have attacks coming against them to annihilate them. But the Jewish people, God will be faithful to them. If you want to prove for the existence of God, just look at the Jewish people. The fact that they exist shows the existence of God. All the people that have come against them trying to annihilate them. J. Vernon McGee put it like this. He said, the Jew has attended the funeral of every one of the nations that has tried to exterminate him. The Jew has attended the funeral of every one of the nations that has tried to exterminate him. So Haman raises up, but God's faithfulness is true. Because if the Jews are annihilated, guess what? Then you have no Jewish prophecy, messianic prophecy, and you don't have Jesus. He's not the Messiah. So God's going to be faithful, even though the moment right now is not fair. Can we trust in God as leaders and as followers to trust in the faithfulness of God, even when life is not fair? Life is not fair. And what happens is there's going to be people at your office, at your workplace, on your ball fields, in your school, in your life, that the hardest worker is not going to be the one that's risen up. It's not going to be the hardest worker at the practice that gets the position. There's going to be times that people are surpassed. There's going to be places that are unfair. There's going to be journeys, moments on the journey that just aren't right. And here's the thing. Smaller people will be lifted up. And sometimes the bigger people. And so you end up with this frustration that we have. The Jewish people, even to this day, when the name Haman is mentioned, they stomp their feet and say, may his name be blotted out. So Haman is going to end up with some short-term victories, but long-term his name is going to be despised. Life is unfair. Leadership is unfair. Haman uses his office for something negative. You can tell the character of somebody by how they use their authority. Haman used it to try to annihilate the Jews. Life is unfair. Now, let me just tell us something just as clear as I can say it. If you say the phrase, that's unfair, I want you to know that phrase is going to get burned out of your life. Because life is going to burn that phrase out of you. And you and I have a choice. Life can be unfair. It is. We can either go down one road where we're trying to make it fair and we're going to end up bitter because it's not going to work. Or we can go down another road of realizing life's not fair, but that God is faithful and we'll end up better on that road. The choice is up to us. Life is unfair will be burned out of your leadership and out of your life. And also, let me say this, for us to say, a people with running water, with adequate housing, with transportation, with our own cars, with clothes that we wear for fashion, not for function, with F-16s that patrol our borders, for us to say life's not fair in looking at the rest of the world is completely arrogant and selfish and greedy. You and I have nothing to complain about. I have nothing to complain about in my life, but I still do. Life is unfair, yes, but God is faithful. Think about how unfair it was for Jesus Christ to be crucified, to be accused, to be wrongfully accused, to be said that he should die a sinner's death on the cross. Life is unfair, but yet God was faithful to Jesus Christ. Mordecai in this, as we read, he's not gonna bow though. He says, I'm not gonna bow down. Now let's understand what this means here. This isn't a statement of that we're to have civic disobedience when we don't agree with something with the government. Now, here's the deal. Let's just speak in our own political culture. We have to respect the position of elected leaders, even if we don't respect the policies of elected leaders. We respect the position of elected leader, even if we don't agree with the policy of an elected leader. So if I ever get to meet a president and I don't agree with the policies, you know what I'm going to say? Nice to meet you, Mr. President. That's what I'm going to say. Even if I don't agree with the policy. That's not what Mordecai is doing. Mordecai is interacting with an avowed enemy of the Jewish people that wants to annihilate them. So this would be like this. It'd be like meeting a terrorist leader. I do not have to respect the position of a terrorist leader. Now, if I ever meet a terrorist leader, I hope it's in a very gospel-centered way, okay? I'm not looking forward to meeting any terrorist leaders. But that's not a position to be respected the same as it is to be an elected leader. We respect the position. Do you see what I'm saying? So this isn't just a call for civil disobedience. This is a statement of saying, this is a position of an avowed enemy of the Jewish people, and so I'm not going to bow before him as a person. I'm not going to be able to do that. So Mordecai does not bow. Life isn't fair, but yet Mordecai still is trusting in the faithfulness of God is what we can assume from this. Now look at verse 3 through 6. And we're going to get two other points of leadership stinking and life stinking. Verse 3, the members of the royal staff at the king's gate asked Mordecai, why are you disobeying the king's command? When they had warned him day after day, and he still would not listen to them, they told Haman to see if Mordecai's actions would be tolerated. Why? Since he was told that he was a Jew. So that's what this whole thing's about. When Haman saw that Mordecai was not bowing down or paying him homage, he was filled with rage. And when he learned of Mordecai's ethnic identity, Haman decided not to do away with Mordecai alone. He set out to destroy all of Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout Ahasuerus' kingdom. So Haman sees that Mordecai is a Jew, and he wants to go after all the Jewish people. Now, here's what's interesting about Haman. Everybody's bowing down before Haman except one person, and it drives Haman crazy. Everybody's bowing down, but one person drives him crazy. Why is that? Haman is a little man in a big office is what's happening. Haman is a little man in a big office, and he can't take it unless everybody sings his praises. Here's what one British essay writer, Walter Savage Landor, in the 1800s. So he wrote this, not particularly about Haman, but he says this. He says, when little men cast long shadows, it's a sign that the sun is setting. When little men cast long shadows, it's a sign that the sun is setting. Here's the truth about leadership. Leadership in life include opposition. Leadership in life include opposition. Haman is opposing Mordecai. Haman is opposing the people of Mordecai and the Jewish people. Leadership in life includes opposition. It will happen in your life. And you got to understand leadership stinks. You got to understand followership stinks at some points as well. Because if not, you're going to get out of it. Jesus was treated unfairly. He died an unfair death on the cross. Jesus received opposition from the Romans and from the Jewish people. And we're going to receive opposition as well. Now, a while back, our church took a stand, not only on a biblical stand within our city, but also a biological stand within our city. It wasn't just the Bible, it was also biology that we were saying was true. And when that happened, the Chronicle wrote an article, and our article wasn't that favorable to our thoughts and our views as a church. And I was one of the central characters of the article, and so it published online. And there was about 400 plus comments basically about me at the bottom of this article. A bunch of people that don't know me, never met me, never took the time to find out if they, you know, to get to know me. Just a bunch of people in their pajamas in their back bedroom of their parents' house. I'm not bitter, though. I'm not bitter. No, I'm sure many of them are very educated, great people. I'm just joking around. But one of our friends, one of my wife's friends, read every single comment on there. And she came to my wife in tears. And she said, "That's not you. That's not Greg. That's not our church." With tears streaming down her face. And my wife said, wisely so, "Don't read that stuff. Don't read that stuff. Opposition is gonna come. It's gonna come when you take a stand for anything in today's society." And students and young singles even, and just all of that kind of generation in those 20s, 30s, and teens, I just wanna say to you this, it is real easy for people to be bullies on the internet. It's real easy for somebody to say something on Facebook, to say something in email, to say something on Twitter. It's really, really, really easy. And I just want to say to you, don't believe that about yourself. Don't listen to that stuff. It is not valid opposition. You have people around you that love you and care for you and know you well. Here's what's going to happen. Opposition is going to come in your life, and it's going to come from three different groups of people. Group number one are people that are just flat out mean, argumentative, petty, and hard to work with. That's gonna be group one. They're just flat out mean, they're argumentative, they're petty, and they're hard to work with. And you as a leader are gonna try everything you can. Well, maybe if I said it this way, maybe if I did this, and maybe if I did that, and you're gonna try everything you can, and it's never gonna work. And there's going to be a trail in that person's life that you, if you were to ask 10 people in life, they'd be like, "Oh yeah, I know about him." Number two, there's going to be people, a group of people, that they're going to have limited information with unlimited opinions. Limited information with unlimited opinions. When you're the leader, that means you have more information than everybody else has. That's part of being the leader. You and I do not need to know the security briefings of the president. I do not want to know everything that political officials know, because if I know it, then everybody else in the world knows it, and then they can't do what they need to do. We need to not know things, but we're going to encounter people that have unlimited opinions with very limited information, and that's going to be a place of opposition. Group three, there's some people that will oppose you, and here's the deal. They're right, and they have a point. And you need to look for that piece of gold in the midst of what they're saying. You don't need to, in your pride, say, "Well, I don't want to hear anything, and they're opposed, and they're just haters." No. What is it I can learn? I might disagree with 1 through 9, but I might agree with number 10. The customer service at your business might not be what it needs to be. The wait times might be too long. It might cost too much. It might not have been the right thing. There's something that we can learn. Jesus Christ was falsely accused. He was opposed. He had people that were argumentative and hated him, hateful against him. They had limited information and an unlimited opinion. But let me tell you what, there was nothing that they said against him that was actually true. So this one breaks down for him because he was completely sinless and holy and righteous. But those three groups are going to come into your life. Teddy Roosevelt, I put the quote at the bottom of your listening guide because I thought you would want to maybe take this home. This is what he says. It's not the critic who counts, or the man who points out where the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man in the arena whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself on a worthy cause, who at best in the end knows the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with the cold, timid souls who have never known victory nor defeat. Opposition will come, but you continue on. And let God use you as a leader and as a follower. He's the ultimate leader. We're to be the followers, and then the Lord can take us through any opposition. Your hurt will be the price of impact in your life. I met with a church planter recently. He's fired up. He's excited. He's asking me all these questions. I'm saying, try this. What do you think about that? Let me help you with this and different things. And so he's giving me questions and answers, and we're talking back and forth. Then we got to the end. He had a big smile, and I stopped him. I said, but I want you to know this. You will be hurt. You will be betrayed. The 20 families that start with you, at least five will leave you at some point. And it will wound you greatly. And leader, your wounds are the wounds of Jesus. Leader, follower, those hurts God can use to mold you more in his image. And your wounds are the price of impact. You will be hurt. Paul puts it like this in Acts chapter 20, verse 19. He says, I served the Lord with all humility, but with tears and with trials that came to me through the plots of the Jews. And I did not shrink back from proclaiming to you anything that was profitable. In 1 Corinthians 16, 9, he said this, a great door of effective service has been opened wide to me, but there are many who are opposed. It's going to happen in your life. Everyone receives opposition. But Mordecai does not bow. What happens when he doesn't bow? He finds out this, leadership in life can be lonely. Leadership in life can be lonely. Everybody else is bowed down. Mordecai is still standing up. Have you ever said yes when everybody else said no? It's hard. You ever said no when everybody else said yes? It's hard. You ever been lonely in that moment where you feel like you're the only one? Mordecai is standing up while everybody else bows down. Leadership in life can be lonely. Mordecai stood by himself. Albert Einstein, pretty smart guy, said this, try not to become a man of success, become a man of value. Try not to become a man of success, become a man of value. Mordecai realized the value of standing for his principles and his character was greater than his success in any type of office in the kingdom. Leadership can be lonely. Daniel stood alone. Mordecai stood alone. Paul stood alone. Jesus stood alone. Everybody left him, and Jesus stood alone because he trusted in the faithfulness of God, not the fickleness of man. Mordecai stood in that moment by himself. The higher the level of leadership, we've heard it said, sometimes the lonelier it gets. But here's the great thing, leader and follower, you're never alone in Jesus. He's always with you. 1 John 4:4 says, greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. It says in the Gospels, no one will snatch you from his hand. He's right there with you. His presence is true. You're never, ever, ever alone. I got an email, and this is kind of funny. You can laugh at this. It's, I don't want you to feel sorry about this. I got an email, and it was from somebody, and they had a lot of things going on, and I sent them an email back, and in that email back, I told them about our counseling center. It's where they needed to connect with, which is available at all of our campuses, and so that's where we were getting them plugged into, but this is what the end of their email said. It said this, I'm lonely, and I don't like my life. I'm lonely and I don't like my life. That was the last line on the email. And as I hit reply and that blinking cursor was there, you know what I want to reply back? Me too. I thought that'd be very discouraging for their pastor to reply back. Me too. I'm lonely and I don't like my life either. That moment I was going through a difficult time in leadership. If I'm a good leader, then why is this not going good? But it's not always the leader's fault sometimes. Sometimes you got to just be fixing things. It's not always how it works. And so I'm thinking, I'm lonely and I don't like my life either. Can I reply me too? And this is what I realized. This is a part of the human existence. To be lonely is a part of the human existence. Everybody's been lonely. Everybody has been in a place that they don't like their life. Everybody's received criticism. And that's a part of it. And we've got to realize that in that loneliness, we've got to take it to the Lord. So here's what happens. When we take it to the Lord, God does something in our lives. Now watch this. This is the ball game here. When we think our leadership and our fellowship is about receiving the blessings of God, we are off kilter. Our leadership and our fellowship, everybody's a leader and a follower, well, our leadership and fellowship is not about the blessings of God, it's about the presence of God. And when we realize it's about the presence of God, this is what happens. The leader and the follower both get to their knees and they say, God, it's unfair, but I want your presence. God, the opposition is coming and it hurts, but I want your presence. God, I'm lonely in this. But I need your presence, and I want your presence more than I want your blessing. Because now my life becomes about Christian faithfulness instead of vocational success. You see the difference? So I want to be, and you want to be, we need to be leaders that are after the presence of God. And when we're after the presence of God, then if the blessings of God come, then fine. But we want the presence of God so that we fulfill the calling of God, so that our lives are about Christian faithfulness, not about vocational success. And when leaders get about the presence of God, and followers get about the presence of God, then the church gets about the presence of God, and the Christians get about the presence of God, then we can stand in the opposition because we know Jesus was treated unfairly. Jesus Christ lived a life that had much opposition, and Jesus was lonely and didn't have a place to lay his head, but God's faithfulness rose him from the grave, and he lived a sinless life and now can be the Savior of the world. So you as a follower, are you after the presence of God? You as a leader, are you after the presence of God? Or are you just after the blessings of God? The blessings will come and go, in the ways that we see them at least, but the presence remains. And you cling to that even when Haman is the one that's lifted up. Jesus was treated in all these ways, yet he walked faithfully. Let me just say in passing, before we wrap up, it's very important that we as older leaders, if I can throw out that grouping, are an encouragement to younger leaders. Because all of us know someone saying something to us as a kid that wounded us. And instead, we need to encourage them to be about the presence of God. All of us can come up with something that somebody said. Somebody said you were fat. Somebody said you were skinny. Somebody said you were a bad athlete. Somebody said you were dumb. Somebody said you were smart. Somebody said this. Somebody said that. They say all these different things, and it wounds you when you're young in your leadership. And you think that's the truth. And that's not the truth about what God's saying. And the more we get about his presence, the more we understand who we are in Christ. So what's our response as we wrap up? Let me give you a response as a leader and a response as a follower. Our response as leaders is 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23. When Jesus was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but he entrusted himself to God who judges justly. Do you hear the presence of God in that? Entrusted himself to God who judges justly. A follower, the follower's response, because we want to be good followers and good leaders, the follower's response is that we show grace and deep support to those that are leading us. Hebrews 13, 17, write that down in your listening guide. I didn't print it out for you. You need to just write it down. Hebrews 13, 17 says this, have confidence in your leaders and do not, have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority because they keep watch over you as those who must give account, so do this so that their work will be a joy, not a burden to them, for that would be of no benefit to you. So leaders, we entrust ourselves to the presence of God. Followers, we encourage our leaders, and we entrust ourselves also to the presence of God. And then we let God take us through. As the hymn Amazing Grace says, through many dangers, toils, and snares, I've already come. 'Twas grace that brought me safe thus far, and grace that will lead me home. Whether you're a leader or you're a follower, trust in the presence of God and realize, guess what? Leadership in life stinks at times. And if you don't understand that, you're never going to go far in that. And we must trust in the leader of all leaders so that we can be a follower of Jesus Christ, who's the one that did all this.
Thank you for listening to the teaching ministry of Houston's First Baptist Church. We invite you to worship with us anytime you're near. We're located at the corner of I-10 West and the 610 Loop. Visit us online at houstonsfirst.org.